We're going to go ahead and move into the sermon today, and I'm going to have Bea Martinez come to be our scripture reader today. We're opening up a new series today, and it comes out of the book of Ruth, and it's a unique book. It's an interesting short little book in our Old Testament. We'll talk a whole lot more about that as we kind of introduce ourselves to it. But Bea is going to read for us, and if you want to turn and read with, along with her, she's going to be reading out of chapter 1, verses 1. I'm going to have you go on down through verse 6. It says 5 in your bulletin. She's going to read through verse 6. So this begins to tell the story that it's going to open up for us. And the beauty of an Old Testament narrative like Ruth is that that's exactly what it is. It's a story. And it's an invitation for all of us to not look for a specific word or a line or a theme, but to find God's message in the midst of the story. It's there to reveal to us the workings of God in the midst of his people. All these Old Testament narratives are that same thing. They are to reveal to us the working of God. Look for it, not just today, but as we move through this book in these weeks ahead. So, Bea, if you would read for us.
So today we're reading out of Ruth 1, 1 through 6. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. So a man from Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and two sons, went to live for a while in the country of Moab. And the man's name was Elimelech, and the wife's name was Naomi. And the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem, Judah. And they went to Moab and lived there. Now Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons. They married Moabite women, one named Orpha and the other named Ruth. After they had lived there for about 10 years, both Mahlon and Chilion also died, and Naomi was left without her two sons and her husband. When Naomi heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of the people by providing food for them, she and her daughters-in-law prepared to return home from there. The word of the Lord.
Job of opening up this fascinating little story. And I say little story because if you've never read the book of Ruth, I'm going to encourage you to do so. It's only 4 chapters long. It's a very brief little tale, kind of put here in the midst of our English Bibles, though it is an ancient story, and there's a lot of clues that come along with it as we begin to hear. It's a very personal story, unlike a lot of the stories that we read about in the Bible. There's no dynamic revelation. There's no mighty battles to be fought. There's no great influential leaders who are the main characters of the story. Rather, this is a kind of a common story of common folk. Ordinary people, not unlike you and I, quite honestly, and I don't mean that to be a put-down to anyone here, but I don't see any great world leaders. I don't see most wealthy people on earth. I don't even see Super Bowl champions here, okay? Any Super Bowl champions? Did I just offend you? Okay. But ordinary people living ordinary lives, faced with extraordinary circumstances sometimes because of the challenges and difficulties that life can bring our way. Finding God in the midst of those difficult challenges, relying on Him, and responding with character in the way that affects others and can alter the course of history is what really the book of Ruth is about. And so I think it's a real appropriate book for all of us, kind of common, ordinary folk who are living fairly ordinary lives to an overcome challenge rooted in an extraordinary God, having to come to and overcome challenges sometimes that are beyond us. And that's really what the heart of the book of Ruth is all about. As is common in Hebrew narrative, and again, this is your pastor getting as nerdy as I get, okay? Typical of Hebrew narrative, there's no place where at the end of the story the narrator says, so the moral of the story is this. They just leave the story there. And then it's up to us as the readers, as the interpreters, as those who've been invited into the story to discern what it is, the message that God is bringing out for us. Now, this can be tricky, and especially with Old Testament stories, because sometimes the writer will include cultural clues that we don't understand, or he'll assume things that in that culture would have been assumed that for you and I, we can't assume because we don't understand how things were normally to operate. It's filled with practices from another day and another time and another culture. And so it becomes tricky for us sometimes to understand what it is. And sometimes we get lost in the weeds. And I don't want to get lost in the weeds, but today I want to say, what is it about this book that becomes so critical that it got kept, that it got held, that it got put here in the biblical record for us to wrestle with? I wanted to do something with the Old Testament this fall before the fall got away from us. And so I took something that was not going to take us a lot of time, but it's critical for us to understand how it works. So where do we find Ruth? Okay, this is a rendering of how our Old Testament is put together. I just put it up here for all of us to know that the first five books of the Bible are called the Law, the Pentateuch, the books of Moses, whatever you want to call them. That's there and are on the top. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. But after those first five books, we move into a section that we refer to as the historical books. That starts off with the book of Joshua, moves to Judges, into Ruth, which is going to be our key for this month. After the historical writings, we come to a different section. This is not all chronological. Sometimes we think the Old Testament is supposed to be chronological. It isn't. Here in the next section is called the poetic writings, or the wisdom literature. Books like Psalms and Proverbs and Song of Solomon, those all fit into this category. And following after that wisdom literature, we have all the various prophets, the major prophets and the minor prophets, everything from Isaiah to the end Malachi, and that's how the Old Testament ends. So again, it's categorized by the type of material that is being revealed to us. But in the midst of all that, again, I say all that to say, so when we talk about a historical book, we find Ruth right there early on in the process of Israel's history and God's revelation of his Old Testament to us, his salvation history, because it starts off at the beginning, doesn't it? It starts off at the beginning with creation and the fall, and at the end of our Old Testament, it leads us right up to the place where we are introduced to Jesus and the cross, and our hope for redemption. So all of this Old Testament, sometimes we call it Old Testament. I want to call it God's salvation history, everything leading up to the point where our salvation is introduced fully to us. So Ruth becomes part of that salvation history. It's exactly where it is. So now you can find it as well when you look at your Bible, if you move through the table of context. When did it happen? Okay, I know where to find it now in the Bible, but when did it happen? Okay, the Bible gives us a clue, because even in that first section that Bea read, when did they say this story occurred? Anyone hear it? When the judges ruled. How would we know when the judges ruled? Well, we might go and read the book of Judges, which is the book before Ruth. But we know the judges ruled over a period roughly 400 years before the kingdom was united with kings, Saul, David, Solomon. So roughly this 400-year period took place. Ruth probably takes place towards the end of that period, which was notoriously a wild and crazy time. Not in the Steve Martin fun way. This was a wild and crazy time that was scary and violent and weird and really, really difficult. But the purity of the judges. So roughly, probably about 1,100 years before Jesus is when this story is going to take place. And so here we have this story beginning to open up for us. So we see that, again, here it is. It's a personal story of ordinary people in extreme circumstances. And who are these people? Okay, real quick, I'll do this for you in case you haven't read it lately. We're going to walk through the characters. Naomi, we got introduced to right away, and her husband, Elimelech. Okay, you don't have to worry about even saying his name properly because he's not in the story any longer. As we heard, he dies in that first paragraph. I mean, he's a significant player, yeah, you know, because it's his role is part of what sets this story on its wheels going forward. But Elimelech is the husband of Naomi, and part of the story is that he will die here in the very opening paragraph of the story. They have two sons. They have Mahlon and Chilion, and it says that they are Ephrathites from Bethlehem. That's a weird one. Anyone know what that is? No. Wow. You guys are learning so much cool stuff today. I know. This is so fun. Maybe you've heard of Bethlehem. Yeah? Okay. It's kind of significant in the Bible story as well. You know, birthplace of Jesus and all that. Prophets would say, oh, but you, oh, Bethlehem, Ephrathah. Oh, that was in Micah 5. Though you are small among the clans of Judah, have you heard this? Out of you will come for me one who will be named ruler of Israel, whose origins are from old, from ancient times. When do we hear Micah 5:2 talked about? Nobody knows. Okay, it's Christmas time. This is one of those prophecies that they were looking for. They knew that there was someone who was going to come, that God was going to send a ruler, one who has come from ancient times, and he was going to arrive and come through this little town called Bethlehem, also referred to as Ephrathah. Two names, probably the same place. So an Ephrathite was simply someone who lived in that region around Bethlehem. And so here we go. These four characters, Naomi, Elimelech, Mahlon, and Chilion, are from this area of Bethlehem. Now we have a couple more characters who will come into the story. We meet already Ruth and Orpah. Ruth and Orpah are from Moab. That's a different country, and we'll talk about that. There's more about that coming. They're from Moab. And also there's a character who we will not meet today, but we will meet in the weeks ahead. His name is Boaz. He plays a very important role. Part of what makes Ruth interesting to me, and I hope it's going to be interesting to all of us, is not only for what we see it to be, but there's something fascinating to me that made it jump out that said, I want to talk about this with our folks today. There is a little word that comes in this story, and it's a fun word. It's the Hebrew word chayel. You got to have to help me practice this. Yeah, you got to get like you got something in your throat, and I know a lot of us are feeling it already, so this is easy. Chayel. Chayel is a word that means kind of exceedingly. It is something that is just it refers to something that is so completely. It's that little 100 emoji you have on your phone. This is the epitome of what we're talking about here. You might see it used when you hear about an especially valiant warrior or an especially abundant treasury. Or an especially mighty army. This is how that word is used throughout the Old Testament. When it's something that of extreme nature, for whatever that nature is, when it's an extreme nature, that's the word chayel. So let's do it again. Oh, yes, you guys are good. I'm just so sorry that my friend Scott's not here to lead us into some other Hebrew talk, because that's the extent of my Hebrew knowledge right there. But the interesting thing is, so when it is referred to as a person, that means this is going to be something of a quality that is so exceeding. There is something so exceeding about the quality of this person, but it is almost never used for a person. The Proverbs 31 women, everyone knows that story, right? Who can find someone of such character, of such noble character as is referred to there? That word, chayel, is used in that. That's the type of character we're talking about. But only two individuals in the Old Testament receive the title of being people of Chayil. It's not Abraham, it's not Moses, it's not King David. It is two common and ordinary people. First one we're going to see is Boaz. We'll talk more about him later, but he is mentioned as a person of Chayil. And the second one is Ruth, the young girl who we just got introduced to in this story, who's going to suffer amazing grief, suffer through walking out a life of complete uncertainty, and yet is referred to as a person of Chayil. There is something about that fact that only these two characters in all the Old Testament are given this title that says to me, what is it about them that makes them so exceeding that we could be maybe a little bit more like them? And that's the story. That is what the story of Ruth is all about. So that was a long introduction, and I'm sorry. So we'll have to go to chapter 2 next week, but that's okay. We'll get there. Today, the story begins with an ordinary family, Elimelech, Naomi, and their two sons. And like any good story, it begins with a crisis. There's a drought in the land, and because of the drought, there becomes famine. So in this country near Bethlehem, where they are living, they're living on their plot of land that has been their ancestral right. This is not a piece of land that they're going to go and sell off to somebody else. This is their home, but it doesn't produce any food. And so after a time, Elimelech comes with the idea, we cannot survive here, because survival was really a question mark, that we will have to go somewhere else. We will have to leave our ancestral home, the promised land that God had given to us, and we will have to go somewhere else simply to survive. And so he picks up his family, they pack up what they can, and they take it off to another country. Moab is just on the other side of the Jordan River. It's in the where the nation of Jordan is today. And they go there to live amongst people who do not share their values, do not share their vocabulary, do not share anything in common with them, but they go there to live because that's the only place they think they can get where they might be able to survive. And so here it is. He goes and he starts. They leave Bethlehem and they get to this place out in Moab and they begin to carve out a life. But before long, about verse 3, already we see something, another tragedy befalls them. Elimelech dies. And after a time, the boys marry, but then the boys die. And this becomes the critical piece for us today. I want to hold on to this, and we're just going to hold it in tension until we get together again next week and move further into the book. The issue today is to look at the life of Naomi first. Because she does next, in the midst of the death that has now come to her, is critical for the way the story unfolds. Naomi doesn't get that word Chayil attached to her, but she might as well. She does something really incredible. There is something that happens for a woman in this day that we often would not catch. But for her to be without her husband is devastating. For her to be without her husband today would be devastating, but in that day, that means she has no means of survival because only he was able to work and do what was needed to provide. Unless, of course, she had adult sons. Then she could depend on her adult sons. But now she is without her husband, and now she is without both of her adult sons. So she has no hope for now. She has no hope for tomorrow. There were no safety nets in place the way we have them today. She is a person in complete and utter desperation. What will she do? You know, it is into this, and this is my first little point, and this is the point for today. And maybe there's someone here today who simply needs to hear this point, that when everything seems dark, God is moving. God is still at work. God is still doing his thing, even though we cannot see it. Naomi doesn't realize that completely. Naomi doesn't even believe that. Naomi's become a woman who is not only desperate, but who is now becoming bitter. Bitter at God for all that she blames him for what has now happened in her life. Maybe you've been there. Maybe you are there. Where there is an anger that begins to well up because life hasn't treated you fairly. And it's easy to go into that dark place and stay there. But God is at work. The rest of the story doesn't happen if God is not at work. And the rest of your story doesn't happen if God is not at work. But he is. And this is part of that message that begins to come out of this story of Ruth, a reminder for all of those who find themselves in dark places to not give up hope yet, but to wait and see as God begins to reveal. We're going to see as we move through chapter 1. I would encourage you to read it this week. Read chapter 1. Read the whole book. It's only 4 chapters. But we're going to see as God begins to move into that darkness and begins to reveal himself, there is something that begins to happen, and there's a change that will happen in Naomi from the first chapter to the last because of God's faithfulness. In chapter 1, she can't see it yet. Again, a little later, she will even refer to herself, "Don't call me Naomi. Call me bitter." Well, the Hebrew word is mara, but it means bitter. Because that is where her life has come. This is where it begins. You know, I was so struck this week. I'll wrap it with this. I was so struck this week. We were watching the final episode of season 3 in The Chosen, and the way the Chosen played it out, there was a specific verse, Psalm 77, that became kind of the theme verse throughout the telling of the story. And Psalm 77 is a psalm for those who are in darkness, who maybe cannot yet see the light at the end of the tunnel, who are having to live through that has not yet been resolved, wondering if it can be resolved or if God has forgotten me in this place of my despair. Psalm 77 begins like this. It says, "I cried out to God for help. I cried out to God to hear me. When I was in distress, I sought the Lord. At night, I stretched out my untiring hands, and I would not be comforted." Not that they didn't want to be comforted, it's just they couldn't be comforted. Have you been there where that heart is just broken and it doesn't want to heal? This is the psalm for the brokenhearted. Jump ahead a little bit into 7 through 9, where it says, "Will the Lord reject forever?" And that's an honest feeling, isn't it? We know in our head what the answer should be, but in our heart it feels like, "Will he ever remember me? Will he never show his favor again? Has his unfailing love vanished forever? Has his promise failed for all time? Has God forgotten to be merciful? Has he, in anger, withheld his compassion?" And the psalmist continues to go on in verse 10. "Then I thought, to this I will appeal. The years when the Most High stretched out his right hand, I will remember the deeds of the Lord. Yes, I will remember your miracles from long ago." You know, the Bible is honest about how we feel sometimes, and it's honest about how difficult life can be sometimes and how dark it can become sometimes, how grief, how frustration, how desperation can begin to so cloud our mind that we cannot even feel God's comforting presence with us, that we cry out to him and we feel there's nobody else there. Been there? If you are there, read this psalm again. This is where the psalmist begins. "I'm in a place where I think God has abandoned me. I'm in a place where I think God has forgotten me. I'm in a place where I fear that maybe God is against me. But yet I will remember the faithfulness and the character of God displayed in the history of who God is to God's people and also who he has been to me. And this begins to be that place of moving forward yet again. Naomi picks up the little that she has and decides she's going to go back to Bethlehem. And we are going to see how God continues to move to bring redemption, not just to this family, but to all of us. I wish we could stay and talk more nerdy things. I love this, and you'll get more of it as you go forward. You don't want to miss next week as we continue on. But again, I encourage you, take a look at the book of Ruth. There is something very profound about these ordinary people and how God is at work in the midst of their ordinary lives. Father, we thank you that you are a God who is so good to us, even in the midst of our despair, even in the midst of our disobedience. Father, we thank you that you are here waiting for us. Father, even as we have cried out earlier today, it is to you that we look. For each and every one who finds himself in that dark place, Father, this morning, help us to open our eyes, to lift our heads, to come to that place of kneeling before the cross, God, of finding your hope and your answers for us.